Hello, everyone. This is Angie from All Creatures Podcast, and today I have a really exciting interview with Suzanne Smith of the Amazon River Dolphin Conservation Foundation. She is my guest today, and she has agreed to take on the task of being the first person that I interview, and luckily she seems very lighthearted and will put up with me as I work through my skill set as an interviewer. So, hello, Stan. Are you there?
Hello, Angie.
Hello. Welcome to All Creatures Podcast. We're so excited to talk to you today.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here with you.
And now, as a director of the Amazon River Dolphin Conservation Fund, I've been researching your institution because when we did our podcast about river dolphins, I was very excited to find you guys and see the work that you're doing to help conserve the river dolphins in its environment, through research, education, and a lot of collaboration. So if you wouldn't mind, do you want to give me a little background about yourself and how you possibly got into river dolphin conservation? It kind of seems like it's a unique niche.
Sure. As they say, I've been around for quite a while, so it's been a very interesting journey to get here. Mm-hmm. But as you know through our talking this morning, that I am a born and raised Bostonian. So my first stomping grounds were actually at the New England Aquarium.
Oh, wonderful.
And I started working there. I had always had an interest in and around the water. My father always had a boat, so we were always out in Boston Harbor. And when I got old enough, I started volunteering at New England Aquarium. And I worked there all through high school and all through college. I went to Salem State University and got my degree. And off I went to work with dolphins. That was something that I had always wanted to do.
That's every kid's dream job, or maybe not every kid, but I would feel like, definitely mine for sure.
I had always wanted to be a dolphin trainer. I've never known anything else in my life. So New England Aquarium in Boston helped me lay down a really good foundation. Off I went on this career, and I got not only great opportunities to work with dolphins, but depending on what different aquariums or zoos I was working at any given time, I have been very fortunate enough to work with sea lions and seals.
Oh,
and then depending on which zoo I worked at, my training skills also allowed me to dabble in some other areas and work with some really cool postdoc and train Komodo dragons.
Yeah.
And so I've, through training dolphins, I kind of just ended up with this really unique career of training all these different animals. But always first and foremost, it has been the dolphins for me. And about 20 years ago, I went down to Brazil to the Amazon rainforest for my very first time with a friend of mine, actually from New England Aquarium. And that's where I saw the river dolphins for the very first time. And they are just these crazy, prehistoric, like face only a mother could love dolphins. And I just lost my mind over them.
So amazing. My partner in crime, Chris, he thinks they're not very attractive, but I, on the other hand, think they're beautiful.
They really are. You sometimes got to look beyond a few things for sure. They are the neatest looking animal, and there's just nothing else like them on this earth. And they are just so cool. And I just love those faces.
Oh, yes. And I think there's something too about seeing them in the brownish water in the backdrop. And then here comes this pink fin. And
Absolutely.
It's like, are my eyes playing tricks on me? Is this really going on? And so, yeah, maybe I'm a little bit more, not that I'm a girly girl. I'm not, I don't usually like pink. Maybe I'm more.
I don't know what's going on.
But yeah, for something. Yeah. So I can look past the face and all of that because I just think they're really cool. And so you got down, you were down in the Amazon and you were able to see some in the wild. For the first time.
Yes. And so I made two really quick trips after that first one. I loved it so much. I went back 3 months later and then I didn't go for a very long time. As you know, life happens and things happen. So you go in different directions and your life changes and your goals change. But they were always there. And about 5 months ago, five years ago, I had an opportunity to travel back down to Brazil to the same area with that same friend. And since then, cool. I haven't stopped. I haven't stopped going. So this past 5 years has been a real whirlwind, and it's Amazon River Dolphins all the time.
Wow.
For me now.
And so now tell me a little bit about your organization. Is it something, one of your, a brainchild that you created, or did you seek them out? And we'd like,
it is, it's, awesome. It's a brainchild. So as a part of, another conservation effort, down in Brazil, that actually didn't have anything to do with dolphins. I was down there helping out, with another group. And once all of those folks kind of got settled and they were doing their thing, I would just kind of sneak away. And I'd be like, okay, everybody's set. Everybody's happy. Everybody's doing what they're doing with fish. The dolphin girl has got to go. The dolphin girl's going to find the dolphins. And so, and depending on what area I was in the Amazon, there's just a lot happening with the river dolphins, whether it's ecotourism, whether it's the slaughter that's going on. So there are many things happening, and I found that there's a real need for an organization, for a person, for a group, to kind of just bring attention to the different issues that the river dolphins are facing right now. So as I started to go down there a little bit more, I just decided that this needs to go on paper and we need to start doing something. So I started 3 years ago by filing for 501c3. We are a registered nonprofit based out of New Orleans in Louisiana. That's where I am located now. So that's where our main office is, even though we do all of our work down there. And so now I go down there about 3 to 4 times a year and just help down there with the different issues
wow,
in the different
that's
areas.
That's so inspirational. I'm really just amazed. When I was, for each podcast, I always spend a lot of time looking for research organizations that I can promote on the podcast if listeners want to do a little bit more of their own research or give back or just explore more. And quite frankly, I was really stuck. There wasn't much out there when I was searching for river dolphin conservation groups, or they were, or they're more general. It was a larger group and they may do a few things down there. And so.
Exactly. Like you might find them under an umbrella.
Correct,
of a couple
correct.
Of other big organizations.
Right.
There just really wasn't anything and they need the help.
Yeah. So when I stumbled upon your organization, I was very excited to see what you guys were doing. And then I noticed too, and of course instantly showed my husband, hey honey, I got a new bucket list item about your expeditions to the Amazon to work with and or sightsee these river dolphins. So I was hoping you could maybe tell me a little bit about the expedition so the listeners could perhaps be like me and save their pennies to go on one of these.
Yeah, absolutely. So we try to do at least 2 a year, okay. Even though I'm going down to Brazil 4 or 5 times a year now, we tried to do at least one or two different expeditions, and I take about 22 people with me.
Cool.
There is no prerequisites. You do not have to be a researcher. You do not have to be a scientist. You do not need to be a dolphin trainer. You do not need to be a zookeeper. I've had all walks of life. I've had every person from hairdressers to veterinarians, to aquatic veterinarians. But the common thread, of course, is the love of travel, and the love of wildlife. So these people come on these trips with us, and we go down to Manaus, which is the capital of Amazonas in Brazil. And we get on a boat and we live on that boat for, it's usually about 10 days. And we have private cabins.
Wow.
Every cabin has air conditioning, its own private bathroom and shower.
Now you're talking.
we know how to travel for sure. I mean, if you're going to travel the Amazon, we do it in style.
Well, I have to share with you, when I was in my early 20s, I did a little backpacking through South America with one of my best friends, Nani, and we're very adventurous, and we found ourselves in Manaus, which is just, that's a whole nother podcast itself.
The city is, indeed.
The city is so beautiful but so interesting. Their history is very rich and their culture. But we had met another traveler friend, Matt on the Move from Australia. I remember his Yahoo address from like 15 years ago. I have no idea where he is. So Matt, if you're listening, hello. And he was very excited about being in the Amazon jungle. And he found a riverboat tour that would take him from Manaus west to a city in Peru. And then he was going to pick up his travels and probably go on to Machu Picchu or whatnot. And my best friend and I really were interested in it. But the boat ride down the Amazon, or whatever leg of the Amazon that is right there, river, was going to be 2 weeks. And you had to eat the local food, which is wonderful. That part I was like, sign me up, because I love the food. But you had to sleep in a hammock, and it wasn't private. It was pretty much on the side of the boat in a hammock for 2 weeks. And our time in South America was limited to just a few months. So my girlfriend and I at the time said, well, I think we're going to pass. But I have to tell you, Susan, now that I'm older and I don't have these opportunities as much because I'm busy with kids and life and work, I kick myself. I would give anything to go back for 2 weeks at peace in that beautiful nature, riding. I'll sleep on the floor. I don't care about a hammock because it was so mystical and magical. And I only did the boat ride to see the meeting of the waters and the river dolphins. So I didn't get to spend much time on the open water. So now that I'm a little older and I was reading about your expedition and you're telling me that there's air conditioning in my own bed, my own cabin.
There's air conditioning in the rooms.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Sign me up. Seriously. That sounds amazing. And then you're on the boat the whole time, right?
We're on the boat the whole time, and we bring, depending on how many people we have with us, we bring 3 or 4 canoes along. So we go out in early mornings, we go out on late night excursions, and we see the greatest wildlife. Of course, we see river dolphins everywhere we go. There's actually 2 species down there, and we see those. But we also see monkeys. We see sloths.
Ooh.
I think my record on one of my trips is 73 sloths in
Holy
one night.
Cow.
We just know where to go. Like, we're the people. We
yeah.
got it. Macaws. And I've seen, oh my goodness, I've seen these beautiful storks. And so we really see everything. Like I said, you know, our primary focus is on the river dolphin, but you're in the Amazon. So we go out and we see everything, because we really want people to experience all that the Amazon has to offer and just fall in love with it the way that we have and want to help and save and be a part of the conservation effort.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it sounds like an amazing expedition. And you also do some work there with local villages or communities as far as
We do. So as a part of our expeditions, and also just a part of my own travels, but when we take groups down there, we stop at different villages. For me, even though, you know, I keep saying our primary focus is the river dolphin, but for me, it's really such an all-encompassing project. It's not just about the river dolphins. Certainly they are important, and I just love them to pieces, but without the people, this project is nothing, and the people have to want to love their environment and the Amazon rainforest and the animals that live in it and one another, more so than anybody else, because if they are not invested in it, then that's going to be our first hurdle. So there are several small riverside communities along the way that we travel to and we visit, and we've known these people for years, and I get to watch little kids grow up, and it's just amazing. So when we go down there and we visit them, we ask people to, you know, to bring stuff with them, donations, and we'll bring crayons and paper, and we try to bring some clothes and things like that. So they get really excited to see us, and then we can spend either a few hours. Some villages we'll spend the day. We learn how they make food. We learn how they earn their living. A lot of these riverside communities are fishermen. So we might go fishing with them. Some villages, there's one village that we go and we play soccer for hours. And there's a group of girls that kick our butts, and the crew will come and play. The crew will be on our team, but these girls are serious. And, you know, the scores are usually like 33-2. But it's just so much fun because you're with these people, and they're just so lovely and so generous. So
yeah, and that kind of lends into my next question: is how do you feel the locals are responding to your efforts about educating and conserving the river dolphin? Is it something they believe in, or is it something they maybe don't care about?
I think that they very much believe in it. You know, and they always seem to know when I'm on the river. Sometimes, you know, we'll be out in the middle of nowhere and this little canoe will come up and they're like, "Oh, Susani, Susani, Susani." They know that I'm there. So it's very much a symbiotic relationship. I believe, you know, we need them, and they need us. But they truly believe in it, and they want the help. They want the help, and they look for new innovative ways on how they can improve things. So we do the best that we can and try to help them. And I think they are very much
responsive to your efforts and
responsive to that. Absolutely.
That's awesome. And now, on a little bit more serious note, if for some of your participants in the past, or let's say I get to go someday in the future, what are some of the skills or findings or even ideology that a participant from one of your expeditions would walk away from? Or what were some of the feedback that you've received that has kept you going?
You know what? Oh gosh, Angie, that's such a great question, because I try towards the end of my trips, as we are cruising on the Amazon, heading back to Manaus, I try to do testimonials with participants. And I just leave it kind of a free form on what they want to talk about, because it's not my experience. I can sit here, Angie, and I can talk to you until I'm blue in the face about the Amazon. But my experience of the Amazon is most likely going to be very different from your experience in the Amazon. So I love listening to people walk away from these trips and what they get from it. In fact, when I take these groups, I was laughing on the last trip because I actually find that I have more pictures of people now than I do of the animals, because I love watching when the sun is rising and we are out in the middle of the Amazon, and all of a sudden the monkeys are starting to wake up, and someone sees a howler monkey climbing over a branch for the first time and just watching their face light up.
I just got goosebumps.
That's what I love.
Just hearing you describe this, I'm getting goosebumps and I'm not even there. So
I love watching people experience it. And whether it's a howler monkey or whether it's a butterfly, for me, it's the river dolphin. But when people get that look, Angie, I know they've got it. I know they've got it. And I know they want to do whatever they can. So every message is different when it comes back, because some people love the river dolphins. Everybody loves the river dolphins. But not everybody talks about the wildlife when we walk away too. Sometimes, you know, when we've gone into these villages and these kids just light up, you know, one of the things I always try to find, toothbrush and floss donations.
That's a great idea.
And I see these kids just light up, these little kids light up at a toothbrush. And Angie, you know, you and I have kids, and if I handed my son, you know, a toothbrush as a gift, he'd look at me like I had three heads. And in these kids in Brazil, it's the greatest thing
ever.
Yeah,
funny enough, there was a Spider-Man toothbrush in my son's stocking, and I think he flew past that onward and upward to the next better thing. So, but no, you bring up a very good point. A lot of my travels, especially in Africa, noticing that, you know, the children in the villages where I was able to spend a lot of time with, once again, with my best friend, Nani. She gets lots of shouts out in this interview, but she did Peace Corps over in Zambia. And I spent a lot of time over there in her village, and just watching the children, if they had a ball, they would be happy. And not even a one that worked right. Like, it probably had a hole in it or something. I mean, just these little one loop, sometimes it'd be a plastic bag. They were like, they figured out how to shape it into something they could play with. And it really does give you a lot of perspective as to the things we take for granted. And as you had mentioned, of course, the wildlife viewing must be incredible on that boat. But I know from my travels, and to all the listeners out there, experiencing cultures different than what we would find here in the States or wherever you're coming from, to really be experience some of these remote villages and cultures that are probably in the process of dying out, right, is just, I feel, very unique to the human experience. And I always joke that if I was president, which I never would be, but I would encourage a law or a movement to get every high schooler to go to a different, more foreign country to be able to help out with communities in need. Of course, there's plenty of communities in need in the United States or in every country. And I recommend that people do that because you get a lot of joy from it. But there is something special about traveling, and maybe because your eyes are open and your cell phone's off and you don't have bills to pay and you don't have to worry about whatever problems you normally have in life. So I feel like you're open to receiving more of this beauty the world has to offer and culture. So
I totally agree. I love watching people be transformed when we are down there. Just a very eye-opening experience on many levels.
And what was the youngest age participant you've ever had? Like, can I bring my 18-month-old or?
Sure, awesome. Absolutely. The youngest I've had on my boat is four, I believe. We had a four-year-old that was able to join us. But I've also seen groups that I've helped welcome at least to Manaus and get them situated on the boat and didn't travel with them. But I find that the Europeans travel with their families. And there was one group, I believe they were from Germany, and it was like half adults and half kids, ranging probably from like 6 to 14. A couple of years ago, I brought my son. He was 13 at the time, and his best friend. I have a friend coming this year on my expedition in November, and she is bringing her 11-year-old daughter. So it's, you know, you imagine the adults that have this life-changing experience, but what a great opportunity for these young kids, especially from the States, to see these other worlds and these other cultures and how they live. And, you know, not every kid has an iPod, and these kids not that are soccer kids. Champions the world over don't have soccer cleats. They play in the dirt and bare feet.
And a lot of them don't have they don't have indoor plumbing. So there's that too. I mean,
exactly. So it's a great experience for everybody. And, you know, not only do we go out in the canoes to observe wildlife, but we go fishing. We go fishing for piranhas and we eat the piranhas sometimes, depending on how much we catch. We go snorkeling. There's beautiful fish there to see. So it's cool. Really neat. And there's just something for everybody.
And now, besides the expedition part of your conservation organization, I know you said you give a lot of guest lectures and do a lot of education. Can you summarize what other education or research things that your group dabbles with?
Yeah, for sure. So we definitely have visited other universities and other schools to talk about the Amazon River dolphin, the plight of the Amazon River dolphin and the Amazon in general, the Amazon ecosystem and what is happening down there. But aside from the expeditions, we go down two or three other times a year, and we travel around the area outside of Manaus, and we go anywhere. We usually travel north on the Rio Negro. Mm-hmm. Last year, we were on a work visa to observe river dolphins, and thankfully we got some grant money. Thankfully, and we were able to purchase some hydrophones. And for the folks that don't know what that is, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Okay,
it's a microphone that you can just drop right in the water. So we got some really cool recordings of not only the Amazon River dolphin, the pink river dolphins, but we also got recordings of Tucushi, which is the other species of river dolphin down there. And we also visit a lot of the areas that are involved in the eco tours.
Okay.
And just finding out what we can do to help them and some of the practices that they have and how we can help them improve that. Because what's really interesting is through my experiences working with marine mammals in zoos and aquariums in this country, there are a lot of best practices that we use in this country that can be applied down there.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can take that knowledge down there and give them better tools to either be able to handle the fish or to work with the dolphins a little bit differently than, you know, that's my 30 years of experience that I bring with me, and can bring that to them. And they are completely receptive to that. And they know that the dolphins that I work with are very different from the dolphins down there. So they are just as intrigued by our dolphins up in this area. So it just really has this really interesting back and forth and this great conversation that is started.
Wow. And that, I mean, it's just so exciting to me that you're down there doing, I don't know if cutting edge is the correct word, but really important cutting edge behavior research and boots on the ground, talking to the communities, talking to the people and seeing what they need, because tons of research has shown that in order for conservation of certain species to be effective, that the local communities surrounding these animals have to be on board and need to be a part of it, need to be actively understanding it, getting something out of it. And it sounds like your group is really doing some cool hands-on fun things. And I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. So if you if you don't like it, we can always cut it out. But because you really got me thinking about this, what was it, an aquaphone? What was it called? A
hydrophone.
Because of this hydrophone, I know that obviously dolphins are known for their clicks and their whistles. And there's not a lot of research, once again, into the Amazon River dolphin or river dolphins in particular. And that's why we need more people doing what you're doing and giving us some really preliminary understanding of these animals and their habitat and their natural behaviors. So I was wondering if you could give our listeners an example of what a click or whistle may sound like.
I thought you were completely going in a different direction, and I was ready.
I love talking conservation, and I love talking serious, but we have to have a little fun too.
I'm not even sure I can attempt that.
Well, I always, when I'm reading books to my son, and with the dolphin comes up, of course, this is an oceanic dolphin, but I always go like, ee-e-e-e-e-e-e. Now I have no idea if that's correct. I just made that up in my, you know, to help him out. But I'm assuming the Amazon River dolphin is a little bit different. So
yes. And even for that, Angie, that's really funny. That's kind of the standard. That's kind of the old school, like, Flipper.
Sure, totally. It's totally from Flipper.
People more my age remember. And, you know, like, every dolphin you see on TV does that, you know, makes that noise and whatnot.
Yes, it's very, very stereotypical. I know this, but that's why I was if I can talk to a professional expert that they could show me what noise should I be making that would be more appropriate.
The more appropriate noise is not nearly as fun or as animated as the old Flipper. It is literally like a.
Okay.
It's literally
okay,
like a click.
No, I can do that. I'm that was beautiful. That? I wish I had an applause button. Let's hear it again one more time. Oh, Suzanne, you are such a good sport. Thank you so much. And honestly, now when I read to my sons, I'm going to be, you know, I'll be scientifically accurate, which I like to try to do that when possible, obviously. So, and then I was just wondering if you could give us just one or two unique fun facts about river dolphins. We have a whole podcast about them, but since you're the expert, I didn't know if there, besides them being somewhat pink in color, I didn't know if you had one or two other fun facts that the listeners could maybe use on Jeopardy someday.
Yeah, sure. Well, you mentioned that they are pink. They are actually, depending on where they are located on the Amazon, in some areas they get far more pink and really bright color pink, but they all start off gray.
Oh.
Which, not sure if you knew that,
no.
But they all start off gray, which is very interesting. But one of the things that I think is super, super cool about the river dolphin, like the coolest thing about them, is that they have an unfused neck vertebrae. Mm. So you have to imagine that, you know, the Amazon River can drop 30 feet mm-hmm. from one season to the next. So there are times of the year where literally the Amazon River dolphin is swimming in the forests. The forests become flooded. So they are able to turn their necks completely from side to side so that they can navigate the trees, essentially. They can navigate the forest. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that's pretty, pretty cool about them. They are extremely flexible animals.
Wow. Wonderful. And could you give me an update on their current status?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that because it's a great question to ask and it leads to a much bigger problem. So right now, the river dolphins are listed as data deficient. They are not listed as endangered. They're not critically endangered. They're not threatened. So data deficient just means that there is not enough information about the population. It's been a very long time since anyone has known that status, if at all. So the reason why that becomes extremely complicated is because the river dolphins, they not only face the challenges that we talk about and hear about all the time, such as habitat degradation, habitat destruction, pollution. Amazon River dolphins have a whole other challenge, and that is the fact that they are being hunted and slaughtered, which is just, it's awful. It's devastating.
Yeah.
There's a fish, it's a catfish, and it's called Piracuchinga. And they believe that the river dolphin meat is a far better bait source to catch this specific fish than anything else. Now, they typically don't eat the Piracuchinga in Brazil. It is usually exported, that fish is usually exported to neighboring countries. And researchers found in just one very small area a couple of years ago that almost 2,000 river dolphins were killed to be used as bait. That is, according to the Brazilian researchers who did the study, that is 3 times more than what is sustainable. So we are dealing with a lot of unknowns. You know, we don't even know what the population is. And to consider that in just one area, 2,000 of them have been killed, we have no idea what is happening. So that is part of one of our efforts too. We are working on getting some population studies done in the area of the Rio Negro, in starting to identify individuals so we can get a little bit of a better handle on exactly what is going on down there in terms of number.
And I don't know if it would work, but it'd almost be interesting if you could do a small study and see if these catfish actually do prefer dolphin over something else, because my hypothesis would be that no, it's just a superstitious belief that started somewhere and just has spread out of control, because it doesn't really even make sense that catfish would like dolphin meat. Like, they would, that's not normally in their diet.
Yeah, if you know anything about catfish at all, you know that they are scavengers. So to me, it is a very interesting concept. And I neither believe it or disbelieve it, but I do know that catfish are scavengers. And so I'm not sure. And I've talked to many fish folks down there, not only the fishermen, but some of the people that work in fisheries. You know, is there some aquaculture that can be done for that particular species to raise that species of catfish? For food and whatnot. There's a lot of different possibilities, but right now the Amazon River dolphin is losing the battle for a lot of different reasons. So we need to help. A lot of the things that the river dolphin in the Amazon faces, with the killing aside, are all the same things that the Baiji faced many years ago. And as you may possibly know, but so your listeners know, the Baiji went, you know, functionally extinct in 2008, and that's a freshwater species that we just don't see anymore, and we certainly don't want that to happen to the Amazon.
It sounds like there might be a little room too for potentially maybe education to step in. We all know that a lot of behavioral change often doesn't happen unless there's education. And so maybe, you know, there might be room to try to help these fishermen see, like you said, either maybe use aquaculture for the fish, or perhaps, you know, somehow maybe showing them that the dolphin isn't the best. I don't really know too, might be talking a little out of turn, but it always interests me when people will use a resource that is limited and knowing that it will come to an end, right? So if you use all of the river dolphin meat and you kill them out, wipe them out, like you said happened with the other freshwater species, that then there won't be any livelihood anyway left.
Yes, it's a very short-sighted.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's hard though, because once again, as you and I talked about, all these communities are trying to survive and not making much money, and this is their livelihood. And so it's, you know, a group of, you know, Americans can't come in and say, you can't do this as your livelihood. It takes a very much,
exactly.
takes a very thoughtful, international, collaborative approach. But I'm really happy that people like you are down there trying to fight the good fight. And that leads me a little bit to my next question. As far as protecting the river dolphins, I definitely think that one of the ways to do that is through education and wildlife viewing. And like you said, people connecting to the animals, because then they're more likely to want to help save it and also help out the local communities and villages along the way. And that's what ecotourism provides when it's done right. So my question for you is, in your opinion, how has ecotourism helped the river dolphins? And then conversely, how has ecotourism potentially harmed the Amazon River dolphins?
That's a good question. So there's certainly no data. It would be more anecdotal in my answer to that. But unfortunately, like many other things, many other arenas, there are good places and there are bad places. There is only one company. I only have one partner in Brazil that I work with. In order to have a very responsible eco tour, that is not only important to me and to my organization, mm-hmm. but it's also very important to the company that I work with down there. And it's just a great group of people from the owners and all of the crew members. They are all very much, they are all so proud of the Amazon ecosystem in their home. And then sadly, there are other groups, whether they're boat companies, or just tours or hikes or whatever the business it may be, that do not do it responsibly. And much like other things, that then affects even right. the good people. So we are certainly doing our part to make sure that we are staying responsible and doing the things that we need to do. But that is why I'm also interacting with the folks down there who I absolutely love. And I'm going there next week. And I can't wait to see everybody.
Oh, yay.
And just...
Can I come?
I'll put you in my bag.
I'm in the midst of writing my dissertation, and I'm like 100 pages deep. And honestly, sitting on a boat in the Amazon River sounds like an amazing.
You can write on a canoe.
Oh man, yeah, no, that's awesome. But in a more serious note, I definitely think that ecotourism has so much to help, and I think your organization is an example, a shining star example of that, where you're giving back to the. You're protecting the animals, you're learning about the animals, and you are giving back to the animals as far as conservation and research, and then also the local people from bringing supplies to help bringing education to bringing support. And that is a model, in my opinion, my humble opinion, that is the model that all ecotourism should take on. And like you said, unfortunately, there's many instances where that doesn't happen. And I think that for all the listeners out there that are interested in doing ecotourism, a little bit of research is probably going to help go a long way as far as what company you're using, what is their background, are they licensed, do they let you pet the animals? That's probably not a good thing. And so is there exploitation going on? I love the idea of going with your conservation foundation because you are educated experts in the field and have been doing it for a long time and are in it for, you're not in it for a profit, right? You're in it to help the animals. And so I'm sure there's probably other models like that, I'm sure, for different wildlife species, I'm sure in Africa or whatnot. And so listeners or people interested should seek out well-documented and really sound organizations to help the animals out.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Very good points. Yes.
And now, Suzanne, I always like to ask myself when I'm doing a podcast about a certain species, but definitely since you're an expertise in the field doing it, how could I convince somebody to want to save the river dolphin that could care less about a river dolphin? And why should we save them?
It's a really good question. So, you know, and people ask that about every species. It feels sure. like sometimes it's an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I always like to point out about the Amazon River dolphin is that, you know, they are what we call a sentinel species or an indicator species. Mm-hmm. And basically what that means is, you know, their health is a very good indicator of what's happening with the river and the ecosystem.
Exactly.
And if the animals are not healthy and don't look good, then that's probably washing up on the banks and affecting the riverside communities.
And in the fish that the locals are consuming.
Absolutely. And it's just this great big cycle. And if people think more on a global level, because then sometimes that question about, you know, why should I care about the Amazon River dolphin? Sometimes that translates to the people as well, because they're so far away. So it becomes kind of an out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I like to think about in, because this is really on a global scale, one thing that people don't realize about the Amazon rainforest is how much the Amazon rainforest, whether it's on the other side of the world to you or, you know, 5,000 miles away, it has a great effect on this planet. And the Amazon rainforest has been described as the lungs of our planet. And the entire Earth actually gets about 20% of the oxygen from the Amazon rainforest. So if we're not taking care of the Amazon rainforest, wherever you are in the world, you're not taking care of yourself. And with the deforestation that is happening at the rate that it's happening, right now, Angie, we're losing 137 rainforest species every single day. I mean, like, stop people dead in their tracks. The rainforest used to cover about 14% of the Earth's surface. And think about just that one area, that's 14%. And it now, because of deforestation, it really only covers about 6%.
Wow.
And you have indigenous people living in these areas, and just the plant and the animal species in these areas are astounding. So
you said
we really need to start taking care of it.
Sure. And so you said 137 species a day?
A day. So think about what that means. So that, I mean, you've got to really wrap your head around those numbers and think about how many plant and animal species there are in the Amazon rainforest that we are losing 137 rainforest species a day.
And so that does lead into my next question is, how can the average person help the Amazon River dolphin? And then, or like you even said too, maybe they don't think the Amazon River dolphin is as cute as you and I do. How can they then, if not river dolphin itself, how the Amazon in general, how could a person help?
So there are a lot of things that someone can do. So in terms of the Amazon River dolphin, I would encourage everybody, and I'm sure you would too, since you've been down there, is if you have the time and the means, come on down with me. Come on down and come see the Amazon. Come see the rainforest. Come see the squirrel monkeys.
Sure.
Come see all of it. Come play soccer in the villages.
Yes.
Go do all of it.
Well,
and really learn about it. And because that helps the local economy down there. It's a very poor area, and they need the help. So you are helping the conservation efforts through that way. We buy, as we've talked about, we buy a lot of supplies. We bring down a lot of supplies for them. We buy a lot of equipment, not only for our organization, but our partners down there and other researchers. So through donating on our website, sometimes that money can go to supplies to bring down there. Not always necessarily. I do that more through the groups that come with us. But those donations can go to the purchase of the hydrophones. It can go to GPS units, which we need. Because when I'm out in the middle of the Amazon and I've just spotted 15 river dolphins, I need to know where I'm at so I can record that and make notes and collect data about where we saw that group. So we can, so we can monitor, where are they traveling to? Are they staying together? Are they a part of a larger pod? So So those donations help for equipment like that. It also goes for our crews. You know, I don't have a canoe that I bring down there with me. I have a canoe when I get there, but I also need someone to take me out there. And I have assembled an amazing team that is available always when I go down there. So that helps them. And instead of that man going out and killing a river dolphin so that he can catch a piracachinga to get paid to export it to another country, he's getting paid to take me in a canoe up the Rio Negro to go count river dolphins or to take pictures to help identify them. So those donations go a really long way. And then every day, you know, it's all the stuff that we talk about. Don't throw your water bottle away. Recycle it. And you shouldn't even be buying water bottles anyway. Everybody exactly. should be using their Tervis and their thermos and all of that stuff. So all of those things, you know, the reduce, reuse, recycle, we say it over and over again, but we say it over and over again because it's important.
Sure. It's very much important. And I'm happy to see there's movements and a lot of talk about getting rid of plastic bags or making a tax for them. And, or there's a new movement about maybe potentially getting rid of straws or in my family, we have portable ones that I just keep in my purse or along with like my Tervis. So there's definitely, I think there's a whole community of people becoming more aware. And I think you just make little steps. And like you said, the more we can reduce our waste, it definitely helps. And so if you can't afford a $20 or whatever dollar donation to a conservation to help save the river dolphins, that's okay too. There's still plenty as an individual you can do. And maybe for some reason, maybe you have a newborn baby and you have to use those diapers. And so you, like for me, I know, I was able to use cloth diapers sometimes, but when I was hot and heavy in the late night hours up all the time, I would use those darn disposable diapers and I felt guilty about it. But in the end, I said, okay, well, I might be using diapers right now. Then I will not, no matter what, buy a bottle drink at a store. No matter what. Yeah. And so
bring your reusable bags to the grocery store.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
You just make an effort. You do what you can do. And you want to, of course, not stress yourself out about it, but you do what you can do. And then also potentially help support organizations like yours. And, I remember being down in the Amazon and thinking to myself and wanting to experience going to Manaus for sure, even though I, at the time, only spoke partial Spanish and Portuguese, the language of, the main language. Of course, there's a lot of different subsets, but the main language is Portuguese in Brazil. And I didn't speak a lick of it, but I said to my friend, and she agreed, said, we've got to go see this Amazon because it might not be here in 20 years. It might not be here in however many years. And I don't like that doom and gloom statement, but in the same instance, it is, if you have the ability to go see it, I know for me that helped make me more passionate about conservation and about saving wildlife. And so I had to go see the beauty and be in awe and be inspired to definitely help me on this journey. So I think that if somebody joined an expedition with you, their life would potentially be changed, I think.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. It certainly changed mine. So,
And so with that being said, of course, you know, as I'm scrolling through my Facebook feed or whatnot, a lot of times you see some disturbing articles about either new laws being in place that don't help wildlife or old laws that were in place helping wildlife are now being abandoned and tons of other things as far as poaching and some of the medicinal use of animal products, which is just devastating. So sometimes for me, I just go into a dark place and I don't know what to do. And I'm just wondering when there are these tough times, like potentially right now, or your organization or you as a person have a major setback, what helps keep you motivated? What gets you up in the morning to keep fighting this good fight?
Well, you know, I have, There are some known river dolphins down there, and I have a picture of Reginaldo in my house, and I have a picture of Kurumin in my house in another room. And those faces look at me every single day. And very close to my heart, I don't know if the listeners know that you and I can see each other, but around my neck here, I have a silver fluke tail that is the exact replica of Mateko, who is another river dolphin that is very well known and who I've interacted with many, many times. And they all touch my heart. So just from day to day, I see their faces every day, and I know that I've got to get back down there, and I know that I've got to help. But there are people that are also fighting the fight, whether it's specifically about Amazon river dolphins or whether it's rhinos in Africa or whatever. There are a lot of good people fighting the fight, and someone needs to stick up for the Amazon river dolphin. So that's I feel that that's my calling. So I keep going at it every day, whether it's raising funds one day to get new hydrophones and new binoculars and a new GPS, or whatever the case may be. I know that we've got to keep going, because even though, you know, the numbers aren't on paper, they're in trouble. That's just the bottom line. You don't need to be a dolphin expert. You don't need to be a genius. You don't need to be a researcher to know that they have far too many challenges down there, and they need help. So I'm on the quest.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Suzanne. It's been so wonderful talking to you today. And I just must admit that I am so inspired and moved talking with you, because I believe you exemplify what everyone could do. You followed your passion and you have started this amazing foundation. It's doing great work down in the Amazon and here locally too. I know with some of your talks and whatnot that you give. And it just is very, very hopeful. And if there's even one of our listeners out there that's been thinking about maybe doing this or taking the plunge, you exemplify how you can make it happen and how one person just can make an impact. And you're one person that then has spread it, not only here in the United States, but then also big time down in the Amazon, and spread your knowledge and spread your passion. And now a lot of people, because of you, have been able to make an impact. I know those Amazon river dolphins, who I believe are super cute. I know, you know, they thank you, and the local people thank you. I thank you. And I'm really excited about this relationship that you and I have formed. And I look forward to learning more from you and perhaps hopefully someday soon going on an expedition. And I just, I really want to thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful being here. And like I said, I can talk about the Amazon and certainly the river dolphins all day long.
Okay.
All day long.
Well, so here you go, listeners. Suzanne, if somebody does want to talk with you about Amazon river dolphin conservation or your expedition or donations or really anything regarding Amazon river dolphins, what is the best way that they can contact you?
So there's two different ways to get a hold of me. And they're two super cool ways, because you get to see a whole lot of pictures and videos in the process of it. So our Facebook page is very active. So if you go search Amazon River Dolphin Conservation Foundation on Facebook, you will find us, and you will find a lot of photos of river dolphins, and you will find photos of the specific dolphins that I mentioned today and a whole lot of others, and some really cool video footage of them swimming underwater. And you'll hear some of the testimonials that I talked about earlier. A lot of those are posted up there. Some of them are trainers. Some of them, like I said, are folks that, you know, just wanted to go see the Amazon and wanted to travel there. So you will hear their stories, and then you'll get updates on river dolphins and what's happening down there. So there's a lot of information there. And of course, our website. Our website is www.ardcfoundation.com. And of course, you will see a lot of pictures there, but there is some information on our expedition and when the expedition dates are. And in both places, you can either contact me, you can contact me via email. And I'm quite certain that even my cell phone is listed. That's how much I'm willing to talk about the Amazon. I have publicly posted my cell phone.
You go, girl. Yeah. Right.
So you can get a hold of me a whole lot of different ways.
Oh, wow. Well, gosh, Suzanne, thank you so much. Once again, you've been listening to All Creatures Podcast. Today, we had an amazing opportunity to talk with Suzanne Smith. She is the director of Amazon River Dolphin Conservation Foundation. And we thank you for your time. And hopefully some of these listeners will be in touch with you. And I will definitely be in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.